A musical revelation from Schopenhauer? Or the mating of a rare Nigerian bird? Neither. The sound that you are listening to is the last recorded evidence of the philosophic career of France's greatest contemporary thinker, Georges Dupont, actually caught here on this tape in the act of thinking. But what, we ask, is he thinking about? Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight we look back over the strange career of French thinker and philosopher Georges Dupont. Little is known of his childhood. He was born in 1900, the same year as Louis Armstrong, King of Jazz, in the small village of Perignon, deep in the Dordogne. Marvellous word, the Dordogne. In the face of a complete dearth of information surrounding his youth, we can only assume that it followed the pattern of so many youths before him. The celebration at birth. The christening.
Et Spiritus Sanctus. Amen.
Then through the laborious village education to the graduation.
Et le premier étudiant, Georges Dupont.
And finally, the inevitable marriage to a local girl.
Does you, Georges Dupont, taking her, Jeanette Giscard d'Estaing, as your lawful wedded husband?
I don't.
Rumour has it in the little village, tucked as it is in a tiny corner of the Dordogne. I say again, Dordogne, that the marriage was not a great success.
Quoi?
What?
Rien.
Nothing.
Rien. Rien.
Nothing.
Rien.
Nothing.
Toujours rien.
Always nothing.
Aujourd'hui, rien.
Today, nothing.
Demain, rien.
Tomorrow, nothing.
Hier, rien.
Yesterday, nothing.
Tais-toi, vache.
Do keep quiet, cow. Oh, oh, oh. Boo-hoo.
The old story.
Boo-hoo.
How often is great genius born out of suffering? The list is long and noble. Beethoven, Samuel Johnson, Kunta Kinte, Delius. As the marriage grew less and less bearable, Dupont withdrew more and more into himself. It was on the 24th of October, 1923, that Dupont emerged from his meditation and sent off his now legendary international missives.
Alors, fini.
The next day, October the 25th, a curious letter had made its way onto the letter pages of the world's greatest newspapers.
The Times. Dear Sir, I am thinking. Yours, etc., G. Dupont, France.
Le soir. Monsieur, je pense. Votre, etc., G. Dupont, France.
Pravda. Tovareschi. Я думаю, ваш, etc., G. Dupont. Miet Czechoslovakia.
George Moore and Bertrand Russell tussled as to which one should first answer Dupont. Moore claimed that, like a good wine, he was growing better the older he became, but Russell riposted that, like a good wine, he was only of interest when drunk. And so, the day after Dupont's claim, there was another letter in the Times.
Dear Sir, about what? Etc. Russell.
To this, Dupont swiftly replied,
Dear Sir, about it. Etc. Dupont.
It is the second letter, the mysterious it, that is crucial to the thought of Dupont and has been the core of interest and controversy throughout his career. Dupont himself has been of little help in explaining it in the rare interviews that he has given through the years. 1936.
Mr. Dupont, your basic philosophical statement has been encapsulated in the phrase, I am thinking about it. Is that correct?
No, that is not correct. I am thinking about it is not a phrase. It contains a main verb and the word think and is therefore a clause. How am I expected to discuss philosophy with a young man who is not even aware of the simplest rules of grammar?
1948. Do continue.
My philosophy is not a philosophy of decisions. It is a philosophy of thought. It requires thinking, not mathematics.
Yes, sir. You have asserted that many times, but what exactly are you thinking about?
You are a clever young man. Your father must be proud of you.
Thank you.
Hey, is your father proud of you, then? Is he proud of the path of life you have chosen?
Well,
Does he swell with pride when he thinks of you sitting in other people's kitchens with your recording machine, prying into their lives, spying into their privacy, asking stupid questions and expecting intelligent answers, playing worst supporting actor for a few minutes of radio time and then being switched off like that?
Such interviews as this have done little to clarify the degree of progress made by Dupont in his philosophy since his first startling announcement. Another effort to clarify matters was made only 10 years ago, 1968.
Monsieur Dupont, what are you thinking about?
I am, woman, thinking about it.
What exactly is it?
If I knew that, young lady, I would not be thinking about it.
Have you then, sir, got any nearer discovering what it is than when you first decided to give it the attention of your scrutiny?
Give what the attention of my scrutiny?
It.
It?
Yes, it.
I'm afraid I do not know what you're talking about. I will have to think about it before I can answer you.
But what is it?
How do I know what it is? People say to me, it's a nice day, it is a boy, it is time to go to bed, it is disgusting. These are comments made to me daily by people I know and respect, people I love, and people I've made love to. Every day my thought patterns are complicated. I just don't know what it is.
Well, sir, it seems fairly obvious to me.
What?
I said it seems fairly obvious to me.
Well then, clever chaps, if the central concern of my life's long meditation is obvious to you, why waste your time and mine asking me questions about that thing?
So, in 1968, still no juice from the great orange. Dr. Holden, Department of Social Sciences, Manchester.
Well, you see, at first, Dupont's theory acted as a sort of, you know, anarchic cancer, I'd say. I mean, suddenly no one knew what was what, you see. I mean, I am thinking about it. I mean, about what? About what? People couldn't sort things out any longer. It was like it must have been when Galileo first discovered the existence of the sun. Chaos. Everything was in doubt, you see, because no matter what the context, no one ever knew what it was.
Sense of disorder caused by Dupont's doubt about it can perhaps be sensed in this tape recording of a school in Esher 2 years after the publication of the letters.
Right, sit down, Bartlett, if you can.
Thank you, sir.
Sir, sir.
Yes, okay, Wood, what is it?
I don't know, sir.
Don't be stupid, boy. What do you want?
Oh, sir, I've left my pencil behind, sir.
Where is it?
Well, I don't think anybody knows that, sir.
Well, don't disturb me in the middle of a lesson, then, Wood.
But what about my pencil, sir?
What about it, Wood?
What about what, sir?
Wood, your name seems to reflect the texture of your brain. What about your pencil?
Oh, the pencil, sir.
Yes, the pencil. Where is it?
Oh, but, sir, Mr. Dupont doesn't even know if it is a thing that has a place.
Wood, you're trying to be clever, aren't you? That's it, isn't it?
Isn't what, sir?
Isn't it what you're trying to do, to be clever?
Well, I don't know, sir. I mean, it could be anything, sir.
What could be anything?
It, sir.
Okay, Wood, I've had enough. That's it.
What is it, sir?
Shut it, Wood.
What, sir?
Your mouth, Wood.
Oh, is that it, sir?
Is that what?
What everybody's talking about? Is my mouth the centre of the world's prime philosophical debate?
Wood.
Soon there arose a situation where there was a distinct difficulty in talking about almost anything without some confusion.
Nice day, isn't it?
Isn't what?
No, I mean, it is a nice day, don't you think?
Well, I don't know why it should be any more a nice day than it should be an elephant or a sandwich or a figment of Dupont's imagination.
No, I mean, look at the weather. The sun is shining, the birds are singing, there are no clouds, therefore, nice day.
Yes, I can see that. So what?
Well, so nothing. I'm simply pointing out as a gesture of friendship that it is a nice day.
Now, you keep saying that. On what grounds could you possibly come to that conclusion?
Oh, my God, I could strangle that bloody Frenchman.
Interpretations of it.
But, of course, nobody did strangle Dupont, and he continued to live in almost complete seclusion. First in the Dordogne... I will say that again for animal lovers. The Dordogne. And later, somewhere in Normandy, his reputation and his neck, as far as we know, still intact. What communication there was with him could only come through the seeking out of his friends and intimates, a painstaking process often with disappointing results. In 1970, I spoke with Professor Parker of Suncrush College, Cambridge, friend and admirer of Dupont, about Dupont.
Yes.
Professor Parker, how do you rank Georges Dupont?
As a philosopher or as a man?
As a philosopher.
Ah, because if you'd asked me how I rank him as a man, I should say very highly indeed. He was a very attractive man. Beautiful, I should say, in his peculiarly French way.
No, I meant as a philosopher.
Yes, I think the word is beautiful. His skin had that marvellous texture that we English just don't seem capable of attaining, that tender smoothness as though it had been conditioned daily with olive oil.
And his philosophy, Professor Parker?
He had this marvellous way of talking, this superb guttural monotone, something like the sandpapered croak of a frog. Well, of course, it was the croak of a frog, but I'm speaking simulitically. No, that isn't right. What is the adverb from the simile?
I'm afraid I don't know.
No, George didn't know either. I remember we used to sit here day after day, our lithe young bodies brazen in the sun, thinking about just that. I used to suggest things like simulaciously, and he'd throw back his long neck and laugh and call me a stupid old homosexual goat. And then he'd suggest similarly, and I'd leap on top of him, giggling and yelling things like, "Oh, you old frog, you can't even speak English yet."
Yes, yes. But now, turning to his philosophy, how do you rank him as a philosopher?
A what? Sorry.
A philosopher.
Oh, so that's what's become of him. Goodness gracious me, so that's what's become of him, is it? When I knew him, he was just a supple young tree, bursting into blossom, dreaming, scheming, misdemeaning here in the meadows. Oh, those were the days, and to think that sinewy thing turned into a philosopher, a crapulous old bore playing with words because nobody would allow him to play with anything else. Was he a good philosopher? How do you rank him as a philosopher?
Later, in 1974, I tracked down another friend of the philosophers.
Yes.
Miss Dulay, did you know Georges Dupont very well?
In the biblical sense?
No, I meant more in the mind meets mind sense.
No.
In the biblical sense, then, did you know him?
Georges was a magnificent lover.
Was he?
Yes, to make love with him was like nothing else on earth.
And what's that like?
It's like a mysterious journey through the wildest depths of the Amazon jungle on a roller coaster without a seatbelt.
You enjoyed it?
He was a magnificent lover.
And what about his philosophy?
He was a great philosopher.
Yes, he was, indeed.
A great philosopher and a magnificent lover.
Yes, that too.
You knew him?
No, not in the biblical sense.
Pity. He was a great lover. He didn't discriminate.
And what about his philosophy? Would you say he loved that too?
Yes, he loved philosophy also. But most he loved me. When the lights faded low over la rue de la Madeleine, even when those whistling waiters had stopped to whistle, he would say, "I'm Marie-Claire Simon." And I would say, "Georges." And he would say, "Philosophy is a game for mugs. I like most to make whoopee."
To make whoopee?
Yes, to make whoopee.
Was he a good chef?
No. To make rupee is to make love.
So he didn't talk about his philosophy a great deal?
No. Sometimes I would ask him about his philosophy, but his reply was curt.
What did he say?
Curt?
So, Georges Dupont, a philosopher who clearly didn't mix work and play. As you can see, no end of research had brought us really close to Dupont in the earlier years of this decade. Yes? ladies and gentlemen, I would like to interrupt what I'm saying by apologizing to the more thoughtful of our listeners for referring to the act of lovemaking as play. This is or was obviously a trivialization of one of the most beautiful and meaningful things that life has to offer. I'm sorry. But now back to Dupont. The lack of success in analysis of his theories led to puzzlement, puzzlement to irritation, and irritation to indifference. By 1976, as I passed through the dark corridors of the BBC Culture Department, I felt almost overcome by the waves of boredom that washed over me every time I mentioned Dupont's rather facile name. But earlier this year, Dupont at last smashed back into the popular consciousness. It was his first pronouncement for almost 40 years. It was in the Times of March 23rd.
To the editor of the Times. Dear sir, I think that I am thinking. Yours, etc., Dupont.
Every thinking man in Britain was struck dumb. Even some of the women were a little surprised. Would anything be known any longer when even the process of thought itself was in doubt? Dupont himself would have to be found. So for this feature tonight, we decided that someone dynamic was needed, and we looked about for a young man who might really, at last, be able to get to the bottom of Georges Dupont. Metaphorically speaking. We established a nationwide search for the person to search for the truth behind Dupont. Multilingual, philosophical, and witty was the brief. The man we found was Gerald Steele, writer and sports commentator in the Northeast for over 20 years, co-presenter of the Yorkshire TV series Duvet, and a great friend of Andrew Lloyd Webber. Gerald Steele.
A smooth, white, flat beach in Normandy in early June. That's what I've got here beneath my feet. White, white sand stretching as far as the eye can see. And lots of that here too, of course. See there, over to my right. It's amazing what you can see by the sea and what the sea saw when these beaches were invaded on D-Day almost 34 years ago. Water, water everywhere, and lots of time to think, and that's what we're here for, of course. Today, to think about the great thinker Georges Dupont, rough translation George of the Bridge, man or myth or man of mystery. France, of course, the country that spawned many great Frenchmen, a place of great national character and contrasts. Once described by Menachem Begin as La Belle France, the country that has flourished since the war into a force to be reckoned with in world-class philosophy. Philosophy, although lacking the mass market appeal of, let's say, the Eurovision Song Contest won last year, of course, by Israel, has, through Dupont's simple manipulation of the verb ponce, really given the world something to ponce about. But having said that, of course, seaside means water. Water means swimming, and swimming means people. People like Jacques Boulangerie. Jacques. You are a cross-channel swimmer. Have you ever heard of Georges Dupont?
The philosopher?
Yes, that's right.
No, I don't think so.
The trail to Dupont was a long and arduous one that took over two long and arduous months. In most villages I passed through, the reaction was long and very similar. Bonjour, barman.
Bonjour, monsieur.
Avez-vous du vin ordinaire?
Pardon?
Do you have a house wine?
Ah, yes, monsieur, of course.
I'm looking for a philosopher.
No, perhaps I can help, sir.
Georges Dupont.
Dupont?
Je pense que je pense.
Il y a 10 ans, depuis quelqu'un avait la tacité, adieu, cette...
He explained that it was nearly 10 years since anyone had dared to utter that clause in public, and then only at the cost of the poor man's life. He had been a ball-bearing manufacturer from Lyon, who had uttered the phrase in a fit of pique at a poker game, left the bar late, and was found in his hotel room in the morning with his, refroidissant, something to do with raw meat. Oh, God. Well, anyway, it had been pretty nasty, so I'd better watch out. Even those people previously well known to Dupont denied all knowledge of him or his whereabouts.
Some clearly knew where he was, but refused to divulge the information even under the offer of large bribes. Until one day, in a small cafe in Barfleur.
Look, I'll give you an onion.
No.
All right. I'll give you three onions.
No.
Three onions and a blue striped shirt.
No.
Listen, I'll give you a red polka dot safari jacket, three striped shirts, five onions, and an Eiffel Tower ashtray.
No.
All right. I'll give you a red hot poker up your behind, four onions, also up your behind, and a sharp punch in the face.
You got yourself a deal, monsieur.
After a short time, I had the information I required. A bungalow just outside the town had recently been bought by a Monsieur Dupont Georges, and many thought that this could be simply a reversal of the name Georges Dupont, and hence a pseudonym. It seemed a simple ruse for such a complex man. I tried not to let my hopes soar too high as I made my way through the narrow streets of the quiet quarter of Barfleur. I remember the sun hot on my head as I approached the house. The door fell open on its own accord, and I saw before me an almost bare room, in the corner of which sat a forlorn, emaciated man, dark circles under his eyes, his hands hanging limp. Perched on his head was a dark blue beret, through a hole in which protruded a mop of curly black hair. I approached him cautiously.
Good afternoon.
Hello. Do you want to listen to my radio?
No, it's all right, thanks.
Okay.
Hello, hello.
Tell me, does someone called Georges Dupont or Dupont Georges live here?
Here we are ready to make fancies with gastronomics.
I beg your pardon?
Today, aujourd'hui, we are describing coq au pair.
No, I mean, what do you mean?
A piece of paper, Andy?
Yes, he doesn't live.
Somebody give Andy a piece of paper.
He doesn't live.
Right. We are ready to kick off.
Clear as mud.
Stop me if you have heard it before.
You want to know about Georges Dupont?
You can tell it better.
But although my name is Georges Dupont, you don't want to know about me.
I
don't quite get that.
Although my name is Georges Dupont, you don't want to know about me.
No, I mean, I don't understand.
Sir, I am the son of your Dupont.
Where is your father?
I remember it was a very wet and very sultry afternoon, about 3 weeks ago. The rain was falling steadily, pattering gently on the brick red rooftops, over which the mist hung low and menacing. I remember I was filled with remorse in the atmosphere of that far-off afternoon, as I gazed forlornly down onto the deserted market square, through the leaded panes of my father's bedroom window. Because my father was dying of a brain hemorrhoid, and he had only a few hours to live. Conversation was sparse. My father, I said, after a lot of sparse, the long-range weather forecast says this rain's going to go on for another 2 or 3 weeks. Yes, he said, laughing quietly to himself. But I don't think I'm going to be here to see much of it. No, I said, the doctor said you were as good as dead. It looked as though we were going to part on the best of terms when suddenly he grabbed me by the arm and pulled me down onto the bed, pressing his octogenarian lips to my listed ear. My son, he said. My father, I observed politely. My son, he resumed, I am dying, and have not very long to live. But you are young, and you have the rest of your life in front of you. Yes, don't interrupt, he said. I want you to take my beret. And he pulled it out from beneath his pillow. Wear it at all times. As you may have noticed, it has a hole in it. A hole, I think. A hole, he confirmed. Through which you can remember me by. All my life long, this beret has brought me the best of luck and good fortune, and now I want you to have it. With your mother to look after, I think you may need it. Don't forget, a rolling stone is worth two in the bush. That is what life is all about. Too many brothels spoil the cook. You've got to take the bull by the horns and blow them as hard as you can. Come, blow your horn, said little Bo Peep, and the cow's in the middle. Suddenly, his voice faltered, and his eyes glazed over. Luck seemed to have deserted him and gone to take the early bath. I asked him if he had a final request. He tightened his grip on my forearm and whispered painfully into my ear.
Don't tell your mother.
Then he fell back onto the bed, cracking his skull on the headboard. Blood began to dribble shamelessly down his face, through the sheets and onto the mistress. He lay very still and very quiet. The whole house went suddenly very quiet. As quiet as a nightingale whose vocal cords had been sat upon. Georges est mort. Et no more. Oui. Et no more.
So Georges Dupont remains an enigma. What is it? A hole in the hat or a hole in the head? Perhaps we shall never know. We'd like to express our thanks for help in the making of this program to Monsieur Aubry Chanteur of French Radio, Georges Dupont le Deuxième, Jacques Boulangerie and the Mayor of Barfleur, the Radio Times Halton Picture Library, the Northern Ireland Dance Orchestra, the French Embassy in London, Stephanie de Gaulle, the British Embassy in Paris, the Lyon Chamber of Commerce, the Trustees of the Palace of Versailles, Trust Maison Forte, and Baron Camembert.
Gerald Steele would like to be a member of the Royal Shakespeare Company.